this new product made by a company called Grail. It's a new water filtration cup. And there's a filter that screws into the bottom. You pour your water in and you push it down and it filters up through just like a French press would. Of course, we carry a whole lot of traction devices and have for years. We have a product called a Micro Spike from Catula. They slip on over your shoes the same as all the other traction devices do. And you can get a neat little bag so you can keep them in your coat. You can keep them in your purse, in the glove compartment of your car. Another thing we have at Onion River Sports, a great brand called Skeeta, which is hats, headbands, and neck gaiters. It's a great Vermont success story. This is a woman who graduated from Middlebury, started this company a few years ago, and she's doing fantastic. Check out these wonderful colors and patterns. Happy holidays, everybody. Come down and see us on Langdon Street.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conte. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. It's Friday. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. Coming up on the program this morning, in our second hour, we're going to chat about a program that tries to get kids away from the computer screens, God forbid, for just a few moments, and actually read a few books. The Race to Reads program, we'll chat about that coming up in hour number two. Also, we'll be checking in with filmmaker Bess O'Brien. She did that incredible documentary, The Hungry Heart, and just won a big award. So we're going to find out what's going on, where that movie's going to be going, and what this last year has been like for a movie that really got quite a bit of focus when Governor Shumlin really put his attention on that earlier in the year. Talks about opiate addiction. We're going to get right down to business this morning. Let me give you the phone numbers. We always like to have you participate. Easy to do, 244-1777. That's our local number. Toll-free, 877-291-8255. We'll have some time here also this hour if you want to weigh in on the governor's big announcement yesterday, bailing on the single-payer health care idea. Joining us live on the line this morning, let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to the Speaker of the House, Shap Smith, who had put together a committee to make some recommendations back to him on some possible property tax reform proposals. And he's joining us live on the line this morning to tell us which of the ones he's going to be pushing. Mr. Speaker, thank you for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm good. It's great to be here.
Let me first get your reaction to the announcement earlier this week. Are you relieved the governor has dropped this plan?
Well, I don't think anybody can be relieved, and I'll tell you why. What was put into stark relief by his announcement was how much health care is costing every Vermonter. And the fact of the matter is we are spending all of the money that he was looking to raise right now. And if you looked at a fairer system, it showed you what each person would be paying under a fairer system. And that's what people are paying now. So we shouldn't be relieved by what we saw. It should reinforce our belief that we have to get the costs of healthcare under control. And we ought to ask, for each person that's not paying 11% now, who are the people who are subsidizing that 11%, and how much are they paying right now, and is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, that $2.6 billion is going to be raised one way or another, and if this system that the governor was proposing was totally out of whack and crazy, what's so great about the current one?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I think, you know, I listened to your show yesterday. I thought that Deb Richter's point in that regard was right on the money. You know, we have to deal with the cost of health care. And when we talk about property taxes, we're raising $1.3 billion for education. Well, we're spending $5 billion or $5.6 billion on health care, which dwarfs the amount of money that we're spending on education. So, you know, it's still something we have to deal with. And I hope that the announcement on Wednesday will not shift the focus away from what is a really important issue around the cost of health care and a more equitable way to deal with the financing of it.
But doesn't that announcement suck a little bit of the wind out of the sails of that movement?
I certainly think that it is presents a challenge, and I think that it causes people to pause But I don't think it's going to suck the wind out of cost containment issues or how to bring down the curve of the spending, and doesn't really suck the wind out of the fact that we've got to address different payment models for healthcare. So I think that that's still going to be on the table. I think the issue of the cost shift will still be on the table, and making sure that on an incremental basis, we make this system fairer.
Were you expecting the governor to continue and have this announcement next week?
I had a sense that something was coming. The governor and I had talked a couple times over the last couple weeks. There was some foreshadowing of concern about the numbers that were being run based on my conversations with a number of people. I had been given about a day before a heads up that a big announcement was coming.
Does that announcement make it easier to focus on property tax reform?
I think that it does shift the focus, but here's the thing. Even with property tax reform, we're talking about at least $100 million or actually more than that, that is spent on our property taxes and education taxes in general on health care. So healthcare touches every issue that we're looking at. It touches the projected budget gap that we have for 2016. It touches the issue of how much our education costs. It touches every aspect of our financial security. And it's going to mean that we may have to deal with it in different ways, but in dealing with the issue of property taxes and the cost of education, we're still going to have to look at the cost of health care.
You put together a group earlier this year of people that you wanted them to make recommendations to you on property tax reform. So what was your goal when you did that?
My goal was to make sure that we didn't come into the session with no ideas on the table. And, I was hoping that we could bring together a group of people that would collect some ideas, at least do an initial vetting of those ideas, and put them on the table so that we could take a look at it right out of the gate when we started the session. So that was my goal in putting that group together.
Did you get what you wanted?
Well, I think that anybody who puts together a group like that would like somebody to give them a silver bullet to solve the challenge. And so I didn't get that, that's for sure. And I think that what Vermonters need to understand is that this is a really difficult issue, that people have really divergent views on this about how to address the challenge and whether there is a challenge that has to be addressed. And what this reinforced for me is that it's going to be a long slog to try to bring people together to address the cost of education and to make some changes that will give Vermonters relief.
Do you think too much money is being spent on education?
I don't. I think that we're spending we ought to acknowledge that education, which is one of the most fundamental things that the government does, is expensive, and it's expensive if it's done well. I think that we spend a lot of money on education. It is a top priority in this economy, and it is a top priority for government and for a civil society. So I think we have to spend money on education. I think the question that we need to ask is, are we getting value for what we're spending? And in many regards, I think we are. Our teachers are very good. Our school system consistently ranks in the top 3 to 5 in the country. And I think that we need to do even better in that regard. But I think the issue is, can we spend much more? And I think the answer to that is, it's difficult for us to put much more money into the system.
Well, I'm actually surprised to hear you say this. So you don't believe that Vermont is spending too much money on education, even though the number of students has declined by almost 20%?
I think that the cost of education, which is people intensive, is expensive. And if you want to do it right, it is going to cost money. If you look at who is doing best around the country, it tends to be people who are putting resources to the education of their children. It's not cheap. That said, I think with a declining enrollment, the continued escalation of the cost does not seem to be warranted.
Can you, let's see if we can describe these three different proposals that your group came out with. I'll let you do it.
Thank you very much. So I think there are three ideas. One is, let's stick with the current mechanism for financing education and tweak some of the things to put more pressure on local communities to try to address costs. And that would mean phasing out a small schools grant, putting more pressure on the excess spending penalty, and doing things within the current structure that would largely be tweaks and that ideas that have already been out on the table and things that have passed in the House before. The second idea is really a change to the financing mechanism itself, a structural change, which would not get rid of the residential property tax, but lower it significantly and not have it fluctuate with regard to how much people are spending on a per pupil basis, and then have an income tax component for all Vermonters that would fluctuate based on how much communities were spending on a per pupil basis. That is the proposal that has been made over the years by people like Bud Otterman, who is a former representative from Topsham, and people like Chris Pearson and Oliver Olson and now Jim Condon. So, that is an idea I think that's worth looking at. There's some really difficult transition issues with that. And as we see in our general fund budget right now, the volatility of income tax revenues makes the stability of the funding a little nerve-wracking. The third idea is really the one that's probably the most novel, which is to regionalize the education responsibility and regionalize the budgeting. And we would basically peg a per pupil spending number determine how many people, how many pupils were in a particular region, give them a block grant based on the number of students and a set amount of money per student, and tell them this is what you have and you have to figure out how to spend it within your community and or within the region. That's a pretty radical notion given where we are now. I think it has some pretty intriguing aspects. I am under no illusion that's something that could move very quickly.
Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do with these three?
Well, these are only three ideas. Earlier this week, I put out a call to the public and to organizations asking them to submit other ideas that they might have with regard to how we might address the issue of cost of education and education financing. I'd like to see what the Lieutenant Governor put out during the campaign fleshed out. I'd like him to put that on the table and tell us how that might work, which was this model that's along the Green Mountain Care Board model. Basically a statewide cost containment mechanism. I'd like to see whether he's fleshed that out and is willing to push for that. I'd like to see Heidi Sherman and Campaign for Vermont have put out some ideas on regionalization of financing, and I'd like to see the specifics about how that would work. A lot of people like to put things out sort of generically about how they think we could change things. The devil ends up being in the details. So my hope is that we'll have a bunch of ideas on the table when we start on January 8th or January 7th. I'm going to task the Education Committee to hit the ground running to at least start with the ideas that were proposed by this working group, but consider other ones that are out there. And let's see what we can do to make some changes this year.
We're talking with House Speaker Shep Smith. Let's go to the phones. We go to Williamstown. Rama, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mark. Good morning, Speaker Smith. Hey, listen,
Rama.
This is a devilish detail here, and this involves health insurance premiums, teachers, and school boards.
Yep.
And over multiple decades, their contracts have been negotiated to the point they are now. Due to very recent changes in health care law, both the Affordable Care Act and the Vermont-style health insurance exchange, we are in Vermont, school boards are facing a looming crisis on health insurance premiums, and that's because the VHI plans are going to be rated at some time soon as Cadillac plans. We're
right.
going to be facing an excise tax on all these plans. And quite frankly, we don't have the time to negotiate our way out of these plans. It took decades to get into them. We don't have decades to get out of them. We have a matter of a couple or few years.
Okay. Yep. Can I get him to comment on this?
Just real quick, I'll end it here. We need intercession on behalf of the school boards to help move the teachers off of these VHI plans and into the health insurance exchange plans.
Thank you for your call.
Well, I have been talking with some school board members, and I've also talked with some individual teachers and as well as the NEA. Clearly, there is a looming issue with the Cadillac tax, I think we need to figure out a way to standardize the coverage that's out there for the teachers. I think it's worth taking a look at whether we could put together a pool that might be a variation of what Anthony Polina suggested in trying to put people into the state employees plan. Why do we have separate state employees and teachers plans? Maybe we could standardize those. I think that there are a lot of different issues that we're going to have to take a look at on the healthcare front.
Let's go to Corinth. Forbes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
This in the healthcare program, nobody should get off the hook on this one. You know, as a taxpayer, I'm really insulted, and I'm sure all the other taxpayers are too. Looking at this thing, what are we talking about? $57 million into the hole on the program, and then probably a lot more than that. We had a consultant hired that. I feel 2 points on that. Number one, no one likes being insulted on their integrity and intelligence. But number two, if he hadn't come forward, we possibly might have eaten this whole thing. So that's the
What are you talking about with the $57 million, Forbes?
Well, the cost as what we've got invested in this program that is now declared defunct.
I think it's
a $100 million deficit
okay.
in the state budget.
Well, I think it's a lot more than $57 million.
Well, of course it is.
Yeah.
That was just
okay. Let me get the speaker to comment. Thank
and
you.
And the last part.
Yeah.
A year and a half ago, I believe, and I remembered, Phil Scott was asked what was his take on the health care proposal, and he did not downplay the concept of the thing. He just said, "Show me the numbers." Now, here's 60% or better of the voters in this state voted for him or supported him. Why don't we listen to a man like that?
Okay. All right. Let me get the speaker to comment. Thanks, Forbes.
So I think that Forbes is bringing together the single payer and the healthcare exchange. And I think it's really important to distinguish those two things because we haven't spent $57 million. We haven't spent $100 million on single payer coverage. We have spent, millions of dollars looking at whether a new financing system would make sense, but it's not anywhere on the order of $100 million bucks. The healthcare exchange is a different story. The healthcare exchange, we had to either join the federal exchange or we had to have our own. The healthcare exchange has cost, I don't know what the current number is, but it's in the tens of million dollars, if it's not $100 million, largely paid through federal dollars, but still, we haven't gotten the kind of value that we want to have for the amount of money that's been spent. People often ask, well, why don't we just go to the federal exchange? And I think that's a legitimate question, but here's what the reality is if we went to the federal exchange. The federal exchange is not working perfectly either. It doesn't have change of circumstance functionality that's much better than the functionality that we have here. The other thing is we in Vermont have chosen to help people out in paying their premiums in even more than the federal government did with regard to subsidies for premiums. And we can't do that if we're part of the federal exchange. The final point is the tax credits that are available under the state exchange are currently under attack by people who want to gut the Affordable Care Act, and there's some question as to whether they'll be available under the federal exchange at all. And if that's the case, then Vermonters who are currently getting their coverage through the state exchange, if we were on the federal exchange, would face significant sticker shock if the Supreme Court ruled that you couldn't get those tax credits under the federal exchange.
Statewide teachers contract, that make any sense to you, Mr. Speaker?
I have some real concerns about a statewide teachers contract, not necessarily because I think it's a bad idea. I just think that it's not necessarily going to lower costs. My sense is that if you went to a statewide negotiation, the salary numbers would move towards the higher salaries that we have now rather than towards the lower end of the scale. So I think that kind of negotiation probably would mean higher salary numbers. Now, many teachers, you know, the truth of the matter is that our teachers who work really hard and do great work for our kids, and I want to be really clear about that. I got two kids in school. My kids are just getting an incredible education from the teachers who are working there on a day-to-day basis. And they're not getting paid. They're not getting rich doing that. Their salaries are sort of right in the middle for the country. They're not getting rich, but I do think that doing a statewide teacher contract is not going to necessarily achieve the goals of what people think might happen.
You said earlier that Vermont was not spending too much on education. Is it that it's being levied on the wrong people and in the wrong way?
Well, I think that it is a real challenge when you get your property tax bill, and it's one big chunk. And it's a big number. And, when you think about what you're probably paying if for your state income tax on a withholding basis, many instances is probably actually more than you're paying for your education taxes. But you get your education tax bill in one lump sum, and your income tax is coming out on either a monthly basis or a biweekly basis, and it doesn't hit you in the same way. So I think the financing mechanism is part of it. The other thing is education costs a lot of money, it's a big chunk, and people rightly look at it and say, "Whoa, is that how much I want to be spending?"
Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, let me just take another couple of quick calls and let you go. Let's go to Eden. Bruce, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Chad.
Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Good.
How's the store today?
Good. Okay. I don't envy you at all, Chad. You've got a daunting task ahead of you. Ever since I can remember, the property tax has been a problem, and so has just any way to find a way to fund education. But we need some leadership. And I know you won't agree with me that you should vote governor's race the way your district won't debate that with you, but I have a solution, I think, to a lot of the problems, and that is, why don't you get together with people, your colleagues from both sides of the aisle, and elect somebody who will make 60% of the people happy, and just elect Phil Scott as governor and get on with leading the state. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks for the idea, Bruce. I'm not sure whether Phil's looking to be elected governor right at the moment.
At the moment? So what are you going to do on this, on the governor's race? What's your thinking on this?
Well, I'm going to do what I did when I voted for Jim Douglas in 2003. I voted for the person that got the most votes, that's my plan.
What do you think's going to happen second day? You think the governor's going to get reelected or not?
Yeah, I think he probably will get reelected. I'm pretty confident that he'll get reelected, and you know, I think that. Most people agree that the person that gets the most votes should win the race, and so that's what I think is going to happen.
Would you support having this not be a secret ballot?
You know, I'm more than willing to show people what my ballot is, I have to be honest with you. I haven't really given much thought to whether it's a secret ballot or not.
Okay, but if somebody really pushed and thought it should be open, you wouldn't have a big problem with that.
I don't have a big problem with that. I think the other people do.
Okay. Let me take one more call and let you go. We go to Londonderry. Oliver, good morning.
Oh, God, Oliver Olson.
Oh, my gosh, is this Oliver Olson?
It is.
Good morning.
One only.
You know, I thought that was incredible that the speaker said there was a proposal that you, Jim Condon, and Chris Pearson have all supported at one point. Whoa.
Well, I think there were slightly different proposals.
Okay.
Oh, now you say that they're different proposals.
Slightly different.
Okay.
Slightly different.
All right, Oliver, I got to be quick because I'm over time here with the speaker, and I don't want to get on his worst side.
I just wanted to share, you know, since the report was issued, I've shared it with many of my constituents, and I've really been amazed at how open people are to some potentially really big and bold changes and things that I think would have been unimaginable just a few years ago. I think people are so frustrated with the current system that they're willing to have a conversation that I don't think they were willing to have a few years ago. And I just think it's really interesting, and I'm looking forward, and I you know, really commend the speaker for making this a priority this year, because you know, we just cannot continue with the status quo.
Clearly, I have not made committee assignments yet. He's being nice to me still.
So how close are you to making the education committee? Is going to be fairly important here, I would imagine.
Well, I'm going to be spending the next couple weeks sifting through about 250 pages of responses to questionnaires from members people who are going to be members about where they would like to be, and try to make sure that I have the right party balance and the right diversity from a geographic perspective and gender. So it's a really interesting puzzle to put together. You got to make sure that the people who are on a committee, their personalities mesh. That's what I'll be doing over the next 2.5 to 3 weeks.
Are you going to be changing any committee chairs?
I am in process on that, I think that there will be some change in leadership just because there are some openings, and stay tuned.
Last question. What do you think is going to happen with these proposals? Anything going to happen in 2015? Is this a two-year process?
Well, my hope is that we'll advance something this year, I think that this is, we have both short-term goals and long-term goals, and, you know, I need to speak with the leadership of the Senate and work with the governor's office. I think different people have different views about the urgency of the need to move.
Thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate it. Happy holidays.
You too, Mark. Talk to you soon.
Speaker of the House, Shep Smith. A moment of your time for our friends speaking of the holidays. If you're... you're not quite done yet, I have a place where you can go and you can pretty much button up everything you need. Friends and relatives out of town, friends and relatives in state too. And you get a creamy if you go on up there yourself, for yourself if you do this, if you play it right. And you head on up and see our friends at Morse Farm right in beautiful East Montpelier. A beautiful place to go cross-country skiing, but this time of the year, too, a great place to go for all of your holiday shopping, in addition to more maple products than you could possibly imagine. They also have a nice set of clothing up there, too. But the easiest way for you to ship your maple syrup to your friends and relatives out of town, too. So scoot on up there. They can make that happen for you. If you're not in the area, do not despair, because Morse Farm is right where you are right now, which is on the World Wide Web. And you can find them at morsefarm.com. They have gift baskets that they've already brilliantly put together for you. And then you can just click and say, I want that gift basket to go to X relative. And or you can assemble one yourself, and then they'll have it on its merry way. And I would encourage you to make your orders. Do that soon, please, because it is kind of getting close to the wire here. So you can either stop and up and see our friends at Morse Farm, 2.7 miles up the county road in beautiful East Montpelier. And you can, by the way, you can check out the little solar farm they have up there, six panels that our friend Andrew Savage was talking about earlier this week from All Earth Renewables. And you can, as I mentioned, when you're up there, they serve creamies pretty much 65 days a year. Doesn't matter if it's cold in the winter. Here's a nice bonus tip for you, too. You can bring one of those. You can either have them put into a little styrofoam container some of the creamy ice cream and bring it home, because it is cold enough. You can keep it in, like, the trunk of the car. It'll stay frozen. You can also get one of those delicious maple creamy pies if they have those. Oh, my gosh. Maple creamy on top of a graham cracker crust. What more could you possibly want than that? So stop and up, see our friends at Morse Farm, and you'll find them in East Montpelier or at morsefarm.com. Let's take a call from Essex. Lori, how are you this morning?
I'm great, thanks, Mark. So I didn't hear who your guest was this morning.
Oh.
But I had the radio on in the car for a few minutes on my way into work.
Well, that's a big error on the talk show host if you don't know who the guest is. That's not, you know, it's something I'm really going to work on. My resolution for 2015 is to name the guest every, you know, 2.5 minutes here, because I don't
with
do a very good
number.
Job on that. Thanks, Lori. Yeah, that's resolution number two. Any suggestion for a third for me, just to kind of round things out?
The phone number and the guest, right?
Okay.
Every few minutes.
So that was Speaker Shap Smith.
Oh, I just happened to hear him mentioning the education funding woes that everybody's trying to figure out the answer to. And there is something. I have a business in Essex. In fact, you know my business. And I don't want to be shooting myself in the foot at all, but you know, there is this issue with schools. I deal a lot with schools. I do deal with theater and dance teams and a lot of costuming needs. And what I find happens with many school districts, you'd be surprised how many that I deal with, and not just the you know, the regular schools, but also universities, that they will come to me in the off season with money that they have to spend, or they will lose the budgeting the following year.
Mm.
And so what's happening is I'll have people that will pre-buy. You know, it's not that they're giving me money that I'm not, you know, providing a service or a product for, but there are people. There's spending going on, and if it's just happening with, you know, the school drama club or the dance team or whatever, you can imagine that this is happening with every single group in the school, every athletic. They're getting a certain amount in their budget that if they don't spend it,
right, you don't get the same budget.
They're going to lose the funding the following year, because the whoever's making the decisions is deciding that,
right,
you know, well, they didn't need it last year, so they won't need, you know, they don't need this anymore, and they try to reallocate it for somebody else. But I think that is just a huge, I don't know, I can see where that could be quite a lot of money that is just being spent for, you know, when they don't really need it.
Mm-hmm.
And then just for the sake of when the following year, if they do need it, you know, they need to be able to just, when the money is needed, be able to get it instead of having to spend it without really needing to.
Yeah. Classic budgeting problem you've identified and exposed, which is that, you know, there are a lot of budgets, whether it's schools or not schools, where people feel like they need to spend the money by the end of the year, or they're not going to get the same allocation.
Well, it's thousands of dollars.
It's too
bad. I mean, if you really think about it, the drama club in a high school or whatever, that's such a really small piece. And there are just so many different athletic activities and, you know, everybody needs uniforms and all this stuff. And I think the teachers always end up getting blamed for the spending. And it's, you'd be surprised how much is really being spent on all these other areas.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I just thought I would mention that because I have talked to a few people about it and nobody, you know, I haven't really had too much response or discussion on it. But
thank you for your call, and thank you for the other suggestions, too.
Okay. Thanks.
Have a great weekend.
All right.
244-1777 is our local number, 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. We'll take a short commercial break. Coming up next, we'll talk with filmmaker Bess O'Brien back after this.
G-Stone Motors website ad, take one.
Hey, I'm Travis Romano from G-Stone Motors in Middlebury. We'd like to...